They say that stories are supposed to have happy endings, that things get difficult, but then the hero rises up, works hard, overcomes. God comes through. There's a way these things are supposed to work. The good guys always win in the end. When is the end? When the good guys win, will it even matter anymore? We tell stories to make sense of life, but then sometimes life just doesn't make sense. Life breaks the rules. I've seen it. You've seen it. I remember my first months as a hospital chaplain, seeing this pain and heartache beyond what I had ever known. I remember going to church and singing these hymns, "Great is thy faithfulness." I remember not being able to sing. I stood there in church, everybody around me singing, "Where was your faithfulness, God? Where was your faithfulness for them?" I found myself struggling to write this sermon, not because it isn't true. God knows it's true. You know it's true. But because I didn't want to speak it. It's almost too honest. We don't talk about it. We don't read Psalm 88 in church. Not ever. We like to pretend it's not there. We prefer Psalm 100, "Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the earth." Or Psalm 136, "Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His steadfast love endures forever." We don't read Psalm 88. "For my soul is full of troubles. O Lord, I cry out to you, so why do you hide your face from me? I suffer your terrors. I'm desperate. The darkness is my only companion." Walter Brueggemann describes Scripture as the honest testimony of the people of God to their real lived experience of life with God. Take hold of that for a minute. Scripture, our Bibles, aren't words that God whispered by an angel into the ear of some prophet who dutifully wrote them down like some recording machine. It's not a systematic theology of the ontological reality of God, not a divine revelation of the exact true nature of God. No, Scripture is the honest testimony of the people of God to their real lived experience of life with God. Now, the core testimony of Scripture is about God's faithfulness. People who have experienced God's deliverance in their lives again and again. The core witness of Scripture speaks to a God who hears, who loves, who cares for God's creation, a God of justice and mercy, living and active in the world. "Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His steadfast love endures forever." But sometimes life breaks the rules. You know it, and I know it. Our real lived experience of life with God doesn't always fit into that neat package. Our honest testimony sometimes speaks to something else. It's not just us. It's why these psalms are full of dark prayers. Brueggemann calls these laments part of the Bible's counter-testimony. The Bible's cross-examination of its own witness. Israel, Brueggemann says, is profoundly aware of the incongruity between the core claims of covenantal faith and the lived experience of its life. In the Psalms alone, there are more than 40 laments, more of these than any other type of song, and yet we almost never read them. We're afraid to, maybe. They're too honest. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? Psalm 13. Will you be angry with us forever, O God? Psalm 85. Save me, O God, the waters are up to my neck. Psalm 69. My God, why have you forsaken me? Psalm 22. We almost never read them, but we know these prayers. We have prayed these prayers. We have experiences where God doesn't come through. We know the experience of feeling like God has forgotten us, or worse, feeling like God is angry with us, out to get us. And so somehow it helps. Helps me, at least, to know that these prayers are in my Bible, too. When we leave out these laments, these dark prayers, we get this skewed vision of what good faith is. We start to think that good faith means always praising and trusting God no matter what happens. But when we start to read these Psalms, we realize that we are not alone. Those poets prayed our same prayers, felt our same sense of abandonment, betrayal, hurt, even anger at God, wrote it down, and they didn't get expelled from the community of faith. They were canonized, not kicked out. Their dark prayers became our scriptures, honest testimony to real experiences of life lived with God. Well-meaning people say things like, God needed another angel in heaven. But my guess is that if you have ever heard those words spoken to you, you know the hurt, the rage they've provoked in you. Reading Psalm 88 instead gives us grace for others when they aren't interested in making a joyful noise to the Lord. Gives us grace for ourselves. These words, these prayers are good faith. Honest testimony in our Bibles of our experience of this life. These prayers can help us treat hurting people with more compassion, more patience, more love. The presence of these prayers protects us by making space for our real lived experience, space for our sorrow and trouble. If these Psalms weren't there, if the Bible pretended that the world were all sunshine and roses, pretended that in real life the good guys always win, pretended that the world is always fair and kind in the end, then there wouldn't be room for us. There wouldn't be room for our true selves. When we experience that kind of darkness, the kind of sorrow that brothers and sisters in this room have known, there wouldn't be space for us. Without these voices in our Bibles, we'd walk away or pretend that it was all just nice sentiments for nice times. These prayers are good faith. They're expressions of trust. They cry out to God. They cry out against God because they believe that God is supposed to do better than this. Underlying these prayers is an expectation about who God is, about who God is supposed to be, a belief in the promises that God has made. The author is broken and angry, not because the author doesn't believe God exists, but precisely because he does, and because he believes God is failing to live up to God's end of the deal. The anger keeps us in relationship. Psalm 88 and others like it give us grace for others, grace for ourselves, and words to speak in our own dark moments. God, I cry out at night, hear me, for my soul is full of troubles. I'm like those who have no help. You have put me in the depths of the pit, in the regions dark and deep. I'm shut in so that I cannot escape. My eyes grow dim through sorrow. Every day I call on you. I spread out my hands to you. So why do you cast me off? Why do you hide your face from me? I suffer your terrors. I'm desperate. The darkness is my only companion. Psalm 88 ends there. Other lament psalms hold a shift. They end with an expression of trust, a confidence that God will yet save. But here in this one, there's no turn. As Brueggemann notes, the psalmist does not acquit God, refuses to acquit God. Israel is left with its psalm, always to be uttered one more time, uttered as an act of profound need, of intense indignation, and of relentless, insistent hope. Israel will refuse silence. The testimony stands. Theirs and ours. Our experience of God's failure to act, validated, spoken, even alongside our other experiences of God's faithfulness. We don't live in Psalm 88 forever. This lament is not the whole testimony of the people of God. The core testimony, our own experience of God's faithfulness, still stands alongside it. But Psalm 88 remains. And the other lament psalms, those other dark prayers with it, right there in the middle of our Bibles, giving us pause in our moments of hubris, doubt in our moments of certainty, reminding us to live gently in the real broken world with real broken people. Psalm 88 gives us grace for others and for ourselves. And it gives us courage. Courage to refuse silence, to speak truth, even to God, calling on God to do better, to be God. Be good. We read these prayers and know that we are not alone.